Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Professor Gabriel Wiener, multi-award-winning top researcher. Gabriel, you have a remarkable, strong history of significant global impact in research and innovation, so we really appreciate you coming in today where you're going to share your considerable expertise, deep accumulated insights and experiences with our audience.
Well, thank you for the opportunity for doing this. It's a really exciting chance to be able to share with your audience what we have been doing the last few years.
Gabriel, I've been just looking at the work you've been doing. It's just simply amazing. So first of all, can you tell us more about your work as head of the Advanced Real-Time Simulation Lab, which is located at Carleton University Center for Advanced Simulation and Visualization? And what value does this provide and to which stakeholders?
We do a lot of things in our lab. As the name says, the main focus is a real-time simulation. So the basic idea is that we are trying to interface simulated models that try to mimic what happens in the real world with the real-time controllers that we usually tend to create to control those systems. So the typical case scenario would be an automated vehicle trying to put down fires in a forest fire. You need to be able to study the environment to program those controllers, and you cannot burn the woods just to do these kind of studies and to improve the quality of the controllers of your UAVs. So what we do is to study techniques in which you will be able to simulate your forest fire, and you will be able to use the same techniques to program the controllers that will, in the end, go at the UAVs. And we study the bridging of both worlds, the simulated world and the real world. We also want to run those simulated models very efficiently, so we tend to run them in parallel fashion in high advanced platforms running with hundreds of processors at the same time. And also we want to share those results remotely, which includes investigating how to distribute those simulations throughout the world so that you can go and get your simulation running in a given site and get the results to a different one, and probably do collaboration between multiple sites doing collaborative simulation. And our main focus is in the methodologies for doing this. So we are studying the techniques to improve this kind of mechanisms, and we are studying methods to make it cheaper for the developer at the end, easier to test, simpler to understand. And the bottom line is that we want to reduce the cost of these simulations and these real-time systems, ending with a higher quality product. And we also study how to mix and match different kinds of technologies and methodologies under the same umbrella, which is usually fairly complicated to do.
Is funding now a sort of a concern or an issue or a challenge for you? I mean, my audience has, there's a lot of sort of corporations and people like that within my audience. Would you be able to get funding from corporations, for example?
So funding, right now I don't have any serious problems, luckily. There is a good chunk of opportunities by the Canadian government that we have been using, and we've been funded also by some industrial partners too. It's not trivial, but it's totally doable. So funding right now for me, it's not really an issue. But always, there's always the need to get more funding to move forward and to do bigger things and more complex things, right?
Well, it must be pretty amazing work for you to have such or so many interested parties in funding that work and the research that you're doing. Now, can you describe future implications of your work that led to the SCS Leadership Award?
Okay, yes. So this was an award that I obtained in 2007. It was mostly related to a conference that I have organized. And the bottom line is that in that conference, we were able to bring a very large number of articles, and all of them of very high quality. We completely redo the reviewing mechanism, and we ended having a higher quality conference. And as a consequence of that, I got invited to, well, I got this award, and in the future, in future events, I got invited to get them organized. So I got lots of experience, after that organization, and I started, well, one new conference with colleagues in India and France, and ICST, which is the organization that is in charge of that that conference. This new conference is called CMU Tools, and it has been extremely successful since we launched it in 2008. The experience also allowed me to bring new workshops in the area. One of them, which has become very popular in the last couple of years that I helped to launch, was is called the Symposium on Simulation on Architecture and Urban Design, which makes architecture, buildings, urban design issues, and how to simulate things that will help the architects to have better designs. And finally, we were able, thanks to all of this experience, to completely redo one of the oldest symposia that that we have in the field, that is now called the Symposium on Theory of Modeling and Simulation. It has become a very large event with hundreds of over 100 submissions, very strict reviewing process, very high quality papers, and we look forward every year to meet our colleagues on that event. So that was the starting point. The starting point for all of this was that SCS Leadership Award.
Now, it's really quite interesting, you know, the SCS, and I should define this for the audience, that's the Society for Modeling and Simulation International. You've also received an award called the Outstanding Professional Contribution Award, and they only have given out 10 of these awards since 1992. Can you tell me more about this award and why you got it?
Yes, so this is an award that the Society gives for innovative concepts or products or creative insight. And the idea is that they give this to people who develop a new idea that has been embraced by a significant segment of the modeling simulation community. So I have published a lot of materials related to the work that we do, and it has been extremely successful, and we have been cited a lot of times for the average in our community. And so they gave me this award for my contributions in advancing the state of the art in discrete event modeling and real-time simulation. That was last year, and it was a very important honor because, as you said, there's only very few people who obtained this award. And it's recognizing the lot of work that we have done in the last 10 to 15 years.
How will your research from the Best Paper Awards evolve?
So, yes, we recently received a couple of Best Paper Awards. I'll try to comment the related research about our most recent ones from 2010 and 2011. As you heard before, we do research in very related areas. Some of them bridge different topics, but the main focus is real-time simulation. And as I told you, we do methodology and theory. So one of my best paper awards with one of my students involves methods to try to convert very high-level models into simulations that can be run automatically. And the idea is you go and you define your simulation model using a very high-level language that looks more or less like a graph. And then we have invented techniques to convert those into different kinds of models based on time automata. And then we can use traditional time automata model checking tools to check validity properties on those graphs. On those transformed graphs, we verify properties, we find out problems, we fix them. And once they are fixed, what we can do is two things. Number one, we can simulate those models. The big problem with the model checking algorithms is that sometimes they don't find an answer in limited time, and you get explosion of states, and you never finish solving the finding solutions to the problem that you're looking for. You don't get the answers that you want. But simultaneously, in our case, we can use the same models to run simulations and find individual answers to particular problems that you might be interested in while your model checker is still checking. And then you can have a much better tested model even before starting with the actual deployment on a target platform. Another interesting thing is that that model, in our case, we can deploy directly on different target platforms without doing a single modification. So we always work on the models, and we make the models evolve. The models can be simulated, or they can run in real time. The best paper award was on a new theory on trying to find schedulability of tasks running in the target platforms based on those models under transient overload. So you have your system running, and then eventually there is some kind of emergency and something goes wrong, and your system is prepared to launch emergency tasks trying to deal with that problem. And the issue is that in many cases, these emergency tasks will prevent the mandatory tasks to run to completion. And we came up with a theory for doing advanced models for that, mapped that into well-known theories on imprecise computing to solve these kind of problems. And right now we are working in a overall theoretical framework for doing modeling and experimentation based on all of these ideas. So that was one of my recent awards. Another one is based on the practical use of all of this theory, because the theoretical work is very interesting, but then we need to be able to use it, right? So for doing that, what we have done is we have developed a completely user-friendly integrated development environment using Eclipse. The Eclipse of IBM and the Eclipse Foundation gave me an Eclipse Innovation Award for doing this research a few years ago. And the idea is this IDE hides all of the theory from the users, and the users get a user-friendly interface. These tools are used by undergraduate and graduate students much easier than if you had to deal with the theory by yourself. And then the interesting thing is that we have been using all of this framework to try to interface different simulation engines, okay? So we have advanced parallel simulation engines crunching numbers at high speed, and then we have a virtual reality on user screens for training, and then we have real-time data coming from sensors and robots around the virtual environment that we are building, and we establish a mechanism to integrate all of these together so that you can be using an immersive environment using virtual reality to see what's going on and to mimic the real world and to put someone immersed in that environment to have a feeling of what happens in reality. The numbers are being crunched on a parallel computer far away. They communicate with the virtual reality environment in real time, and also gets real time data in real time. So you could be interacting with robots around you immersed on a virtual simulation, and we have reported on that. And that was another best paper award. And as a consequence of this, we are applying these technologies also for studying buildings and architecture with colleagues in Simon Fraser University in BC, York University, and Autodesk Research in Toronto through a National Center of Excellence called GRAND. So the idea is that we are applying our technologies also to help architects to develop better designs, combining simulation, real-time data, and immersive environments that will have a 3D visual output.
Now, that's really fascinating, the nature of your work and sort of the applicability in many environments. I guess this also then ties in with your work, which resulted in the first Bernard Ziegler Modeling and Simulation Award. Is that correct?
Yes, you're right, absolutely right. So this award was founded in under the name of my mentor, one of my mentors and the creator of the methodology that we use for all of this, which is called DEVS, which stands for Discrete Event System Specifications. And we use this methodology and variations for most of our research. And so in, so we, very recently he got in recognition of the 40th anniversary of the DEVS framework that he invented. This new award was created, and I was one of the winners of the first edition. And the award recognizes innovations in modeling and simulation methods, and also in applications and tools. And the award was given because of my work in the invention of the CellDevs formalism, which is an extension of DEVS that will allow you to combine discrete event models and cellular models, something that looks like a cellular automata, but more efficient for running and easier to integrate with other things. And as a consequence of this methodology has been used by many different projects by our own team, and it has influenced other work by other people. It's included in different tools that we have not built ourselves. And the tools have been used for modeling in a wide variety of areas, ranging from environmental sciences like forest fires, flooding, biomedical engineering like heart tissue models, and we have a lot of collaboration with biologists that do nerve terminal simulations. There are wide variety of applications in engineering, ranging from traditional networking, wireless networks, and also wide variety of applications in the area of architecture and construction. We have an open repository and a website for the community. We have a large number of users of these tools, and because of all of these, I was given this award for the first time.
So this is just remarkable, again, all of the work that you've done. And I'm just thinking now, I could see it impacting so many areas and so many domains that will result perhaps in a Turing Award in 10, 20 years' time. So in that regard, can you sort of forecast where you see your work leading to in 10 years' time, what it will look like at that time? I mean, it's just so fascinating.
Oh, yeah. So, yes, in right now what we are trying to do is to move toward having simulation everywhere. And the plan is to host simulation services on the cloud and to deploy those services into mobile phones, smartphones, tablets, your laptop. The idea would be to have the users to be able to communicate with the remote simulation service and ask questions, and the simulation would give recommendations on things to do based on simulation results. We are trying right now to incorporate this into smartphones to build new augmented reality components for your smartphone that will ask questions to the simulation, and then it will give information back to the user on their smartphones. So the whole point will be to try to have these distributed simulation engines and the services deployed everywhere in very small platforms up to very large scale platforms without much difficulty, and letting the users to use these services that are not available right now for the community.
It's interesting. This is maybe a little bit controversial, but do you see maybe in 50 years' time this work leading to something like Kurzweil's singularity, where you kind of get this merging of humans and computing power?
I'm not sure, but I'm certain that having this integration on your smartphone devices and your daily work with some kind of prediction might be very useful, because right now many of the applications will tell you what's going on right now, and then you have to take decisions based only on what you see. Maybe the machine can give you some extra information that the current environment would not give you, and that will probably help you to do things better, and we're working on this direction.
Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask you questions about this thing called the Imagine Cup. It's a kind of remarkable event that's held worldwide where students get to enter innovative ideas and they compete And I understand that some of your students are entering the Imagine Cup. Why are they doing this?
I have two teams of honor students in engineering that got very excited about the Imagine Cup. In fact, what they are doing is that they are doing their graduation project as an Imagine Cup project, and they will submit it to Imagine Cup to try to compete with the rest of the world. And there are many things that got them excited. Number one is the event itself. It's really remarkable. It's super interesting. As soon as they learned about the topics and what is it about, they wanted to do something about it. When they saw the UNESCO challenge that would allow them maybe to do something to change the world, that was even the most exciting thing for them. They want to change the world. They also want to have the opportunity to meet with other students everywhere, and people with the same philosophy, people trying to work together for change for the good. Also, they like the idea of competing. They are hoping to be able to compete and win, which is always an extra bonus to all of this. So yes, it was a matter of telling the students one day about this idea for them to have decided to participate the day after. After months of thinking what kind of project we will do, as soon as we gave them the option of participating in Imagine Cup, it was a no-brainer for them.
And why are you supporting this program?
I think it's a really unique opportunity for them to learn. It's a unique environment. The things that you get to do, you probably won't get other options to do them. You could do them in a project yourself, but having the challenge of showing this to other people and getting the other people telling you if this will be useful or not, and the chance to be able to help other people with this. The opportunity to mingle and mix with other students throughout the world. I think this opportunity is unparalleled. So there are too many good things about this opportunity to not take it, right? So we said, as soon as we saw this, we said, this is probably one of the best things you could do, and immediately I started trying to convince people to participate.
I see, and I know that this year the Association for Computing Machinery, which is the world's largest educational, scientific, and professional organization, and, you know, they're global, but I noticed they even put out two bulletins this year about the Imagine Cup and just the whole atmosphere and how it was conducive for innovation. So I can see perhaps your team publishing in the ACM and one of their journals the nature of this work.
Of course.
Now, can you describe then the research behind their work and the wider implications?
Yeah, sure. I have two teams working, as I mentioned. The whole point here is to try to move forward in the direction of my research, trying to integrate cloud computing, real-time data, information on your smartphones, and I will explain you one of the two projects first. It's called The Friendly Neighborhood, and the student's idea is to create a set of applications that anyone can download. It will be not a single application, but a suite of applications. You can choose which one to use. And the whole idea is that this will be a virtual hub for a given neighborhood to know about updates in their community, happenings related to specific community events. It will provide the members of a given community with a mechanism to spread out information about services. And their particular goal is focused on trying to build a better society. There will be sub-applications related to individual services. So they started with something that's very local to Ottawa, and we are planning to do an experiment at Carleton first, including services like local carpooling, giving online recycling calendars for your neighborhood, things like community courses, essential services locators, having a community poster board. And the idea is this will be configurable so each community can do it in their own way. So it could be adapted for other necessities in remote areas or in developing countries. This could help giving better access to schools, health, local collaboration, and working with your neighbors in a simpler way. So that's one of the two projects we are working with. The second application, this one has a lot of simulation involved, and it's a platform for remote learning. The idea is that our simulation software is hosted in the cloud, and we will have it there, accessible throughout the world, and the students will build a client engine with advanced graphics that will be able to run on smartphones or portable devices or laptops, in such a way that, let's suppose that you are a teacher in a school and you don't have in that school enough money to build a lab, but you want the students to do experiments, real experiments. Besides working with your blackboard and thinking only, the idea here is that we will provide a suite of experiments in different areas, and anyone with a cheap laptop and a connection to the internet could run very advanced experiments. So we are building a suite of experiments in chemistry, biology, physics, and even the social sciences. And we will give the opportunity for people to upload their own experiments and to do the, so once we have the prototype working, that we will know how a teacher can create their own interfaces to run their own experiments according to their needs. So those are my two big projects for ImagineCap.
Those are remarkable projects, and in fact, you would have the support of an organization called the Global IT Community Association. I can see this, all the communities that I belong to, they'd be very interested in supporting this work and getting the message out. Those are remarkable projects. I mean, the friendly neighborhood and then this whole concept of remote learning, and just, again, remarkable.
The most, one of the things that excite me the most is that I've been only mentoring the teams, right? So in both cases, we discuss ideas, but everything they're doing, we laid out the technology, we laid out the rules of ImagineCap, and we said we want to do something that is under the rules of ImagineCap, and everything they're doing is their own idea under my guidance. That gets me even more excited every day, because they come every week with new things and new ideas and better things to do.
So do you think members of your team would be interested in being interviewed to get to talk about their work as it progresses?
I'm sure. Yes, they will.
Okay, so maybe we can set that up afterwards.
Yes.
Now, what do you see in terms of the impact of this having on Microsoft and in mobile and cloud development?
We are very interested in collaborating with Microsoft in this idea of integrating prediction with simulation by putting the simulation on the cloud and getting the results on the Windows Phone platforms. So my two teams for ImagineCap, they are working on Azure for the cloud and Windows 7 phones for the smartphone platform for development. We have the first prototypes of the applications. This will probably give me the opportunity to share with people at Microsoft a way of integrating these prediction ideas based on simulation, because as I mentioned, most of the applications are static in a sense. You will get a Bing map on your phone and it will tell you how to go from here to there, or if you have a cafe around, right? It won't tell you if it's raining, which of the cafes is more convenient to go to, if you go walking, or if you're taking a bus, or if you're driving, right? So by sending that information to a simulation service, it could give extra information for the user that it's not there yet. This can help predicting and giving advice to the users. We are interested in incorporating this into augmented reality applications, so that the user will get their phone and they will point to a place and the recommendations will be seen on the phone using your camera, and it will be a different experience, because you will be looking around your area and you will be seeing, for instance, if there is a flooding scenario, in which way to go according to the recommendations of your simulation in your smartphone. So the whole point is that the simulation here should be on the cloud. The smartphone should use the location devices, maps, etc., to give a nicer view for all of this. The technology for the location devices and the map is well established. The cloud computing services are well established too. We want to go a step further and try to introduce things like prediction with real-time data based on all of this, and I think that could be valuable. We also are able to incorporate all of these things into 3D immersive environment. So, for instance, we are working with our colleagues at Autodesk, SFU, and York on methods for buildings in architecture. The software for that, in general, is called a building information modeling tool. And what we are trying to do also is to interface these 3D floor maps with sensor data, and including something like your simulation software on the cloud and data on your smartphone plus prediction on the building could be pretty useful for also for designing activities or also for things like emergency planning under serious scenarios. There's a fire on a building. If you have your BIM model remotely located on the cloud and you have a version of that running on your phone, it could tell you which is the best way to evacuate the building. You turn on your phone and it will tell you run to the left. So these are the kind of things that we're trying to explore, and we see some value for Microsoft and mobile cloud development in the future.
Well, the topic has so many possibilities that I can see the opportunities unlimited, really. It's very, very exciting in terms of the work that's being done. Now, you know, throughout this interview, you've talked about various things, and where specifically can one find the best resources for the work being done by your students?
Well, we have a lot of resources. I tried to put a lot of information on my webpage. My students are going to be... They have their own internal blogs for development, and they're going to go live pretty soon with online blogs for everybody to see. People that are interested in their technical aspects, they are documenting every single aspect of their development on their own CVS server that's hosted on Assembler Online. And they will be blogging about this. I have a YouTube video with sample videos of the things that we've been doing. We have a very lengthy publication list that anyone can download, and I put a lot of information on my website. So there's all of these online services that anyone can use to access everything we've been working on.
Now, will some of this be available at the Carleton CA Faculty Wainer portal, or?
Yes. So the place to go is my central hub is my lab webpage, which is http://cell-devs.sce.carleton.ca. And otherwise, you can get to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/ARS Lab, Advanced Real-Time Systems Lab. Okay.
Oh, this is excellent. So we'll actually put a link to those two sites on the interview itself when it's released. So excellent. Do you have any other additional comments you want to make? And then we'll finish the interview.
No, only to thank you again for the opportunity to share what we've been working on with this community. It's pretty exciting, and it's very interesting. It's a very different way of spreading the news than traditional publications and expositions in conferences. So I thank you again for all of your questions.
Well, and I'm pretty excited about interviewing yourself and your student teams in these projects you're working on, because the implications are just huge worldwide. And I know the audience would be fascinated in following the progress of this work.
Well, I'll be pleased to put you in touch with them, because I'm sure that they will be very excited to tell you what they've been doing. They are very passionate about their work, and when when you talk to them, you will see why.
Well, Gabriel, you are clearly passionate about your work, and you are definitely a global leader, an innovator, and highly respected, and I can see why students would flock to you to learn and be mentored by you. You're just an amazing professional, an amazing professor, an innovator.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, Gabriel, with your demanding schedule, then we were very fortunate to have you come in today to do this interview. And again, thank you for sharing your substantial wisdom with our audience.
No, thank you again for all of your very meaningful questions.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Professor Gabriel Wehner, multi-award-winning top researcher.